So tonight we are going to explore the joy of the Mishkan. As you may have noticed over the past couple of weeks, we have discussed in depth the construction of the Mishkan, the donations that went in, the details of how each and every beam, every tapestry, every fixture, every utensil, everything and every single part of the Mishkan. But we've actually had a little bit of a time jump here. What we see here is from Perek Lamed Tet in Sefer Shemot. But since last week, we've actually had roughly 6 to 8 months have passed. We've had, because depending on when you want to calculate, when exactly did Moshe go up? When did he come back down? When was the parsha of the Mishkan given? That's this, Ramban saying that, well, according to both the Ramban, Nachmanides, and according to Rashi, it was only given after the sin of the golden calf. But the question is, was it intended to be given earlier? Was it only a makeup because the Jews messed up and it's was their way to make amends for the Chet Egel, for the sin of the golden calf? So, again, that's a separate discussion, not for tonight. But the Jews have finally spent the last 6 months trying to make amends, to after having had the relationship with God shattered to pieces, just like the Luchot, finally they have received a second set of Luchot. But not only that, they have spent the last several months constructing the Mishkan. This was arduous work that took almost every single person in the entirety of the Jewish people had to contribute in order to get it done in time. And so now this is where we are right now. At the end of Parshat Pekudei, we are towards the completion of the Mishkan. Would somebody like to read for us these last words of the Sefer, but this is the last words of the preparation and leading into the assembly of the Mishkan. Who'd like to read?
Elaine, it's either me or you. Go ahead, Elaine.
I'll do it. You can next one. Thus was completed all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of the meeting. The Israelites did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses, so they did. Then they brought the tabernacle to Moshe with the tent and all its furnishings, its clasps, its planks, its bars, its posts, and its sockets.
Right, so finally they're done. They present all of their hard work to Moshe, and Moshe's going to assemble it. So the question is, how were the Jews feeling at this point? What do we think? What would the emotion you think they're having right now?
I think they're happy.
Right? Happy.
They were bringing everything to the Mishkan and more than they needed. So we had to say, stop, we have enough.
Right, they donated everything. They did put in all the work. They should be extremely happy. And you would be right. So as when we look at the midrash on this pasuk, it connects these verses to another verse. So they connect it to a verse from Shir Hashirim from the Song of Songs. Another explanation. Now they brought the tabernacle. This is what is written. Go out, O daughters of Zion, Sena or Ena Benot Zion, and gaze upon King Solomon, upon the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his nuptials and on the day of the joy of his heart. When was this verse said? This verse was said on the day that the tabernacle was erected, when there was great joy in Israel because the Holy One dwelled among them. So, seemingly very straightforward. They were extremely happy, just like they were as somebody would be on their wedding day. But there's something else that we have to bear in mind, that even though the wedding day is also a very exciting day, there's other emotions that may go along with it. What are some other emotions that may go along with the emotions of a wedding day? What is it? Is the only emotion people are feeling joy? What do we think? What else might one be feeling?
People are sad, or like not bad sad, but still sad. Like,
right, like a good happy sad, like a new stage type sad.
Right.
Right? Like, it's a new beginning. It's something new, right? Different from what it was until now. So you can have that feeling. You could also, maybe some people are feeling a little nervous because, you know, it's a different stage. Until now, you know, it was just, you know, we're getting there, right? We've just gotten the Torah, but we hadn't really done anything with it, right? We got the Ten Commandments and we messed that one up, right? And then, you know, now this is our first actual chance at something, and we're hoping it all goes well, right? We're sincerely hoping for that. And seemingly when this is done, we are everything is perfect, right? Everybody, again, it works out well in the end, right? All of the complex emotions that it seems to work out. So if you think ahead, actually in a week from now, it won't be working out, meaning in a week from, right, this is taking place on the 1st of Nisan, but on the 8th of Nisan, that's when Nadav Avihu, passed away, when they bring the Aesara. But again, that's a story for, we'll be talking about that after Pesach. For now, we can enjoy the happy moment while it's still here, before we get to that complex one. Okay, so, right, so we say that this verse from Shir HaShirim was actually said, and was actually recited all the way back at the time of the completion of the Mishkan. So there's only one slight problem with that. What's the problem with saying that this verse talking about the wedding of King Solomon was said at the time of the completion of the Mishkan? What's the problem?
King Shlomo, he made the temple. Wouldn't it be the temple, not the Mishkan?
Right? Right, King Shlomo only ended up building the Mishkan, and not only that, they built the Beit HaMikdash, and also that was several hundred years later. How is a verse that's some several hundred years later happening now? How is that possible? Right, what's going on here? So we're going to need a little bit of explanation for it. How does this whole verse, that every single aspect of it, relate to the feelings and emotions, as well as what happened at the completion of the Mishkan? Okay, so now let's get into it and see how this lines up. So now the Midrash is going to break it down for us, why each of these phrases, which don't necessarily in your mind mean this is the Mishkan, but in fact definitely mean the Mishkan. Okay, so we're going to go through, you'll see here when it's, you know, got the little quotation marks around it, that's the verse from Shir HaShirim, from Song of Songs. And then afterwards is explaining how it connects to the feelings and what was going on at the time of the completion of the Mishkan. So who would like to try for this paragraph?
Oh, Brian, did you want to do this one?
Sure. The daughters of Zion, meaning children who are distinguishable by the idolaters through their dedication to me. Just as a marker can be identified by pointing, so too Israel can be identified by pointing, and thus they are daughters of Zion who are distinguishable. Upon King Solomon, upon the king to whom peace belongs, who is the king, king of the kings, the Holy One, blessed be he.
Okay, so again, so the verse we thought was referring to having all the daughters of Zion, all the young women in Jerusalem and Israel being happy. So those who are daughters of Zion, daughters of Zion refers to all of the Jewish people, right? Not just the women, but actually all of the Jewish people are referred to as daughters of Zion. So in case you ever hear that phrase, Benot Zion, it probably is the name of a seminary or a girl's school, but it could also be for boys too. And then we're talking about the gazing upon King Solomon. So it's not really talking about King Shlomo. It's more like the King of Shalom, right? The King of Peace, right? So then true, right? When you look at it in the context of Shir HaShirim, which is written by Shlomo, it seems like it's Shlomo, but that's not what it's referring to, really. Really, it's referring to, right, who's King Shlomo in this instance? It's not Shlomo praising himself. It's Shlomo praising God through this metaphor. And also note that the term Tzion is also used like the term Tziun, which is, you know, if you were like for a greater marking point, which you may, if you're familiar from, you know, Ivrit class, when you got a Tziun on your Hebrew test, that's what it was. If your Hebrew teacher didn't call it that, that's okay. But that's what my Hebrew teachers used to call it. So it's Tziun. Okay, so again, so now we got two parts. Now we established what Benot Zion referred to, or the donor's design, as well as what King Shlomo refers to. So now the next question is, when it talks about on the day that he was crowned by his mother, Atarashi Tralo Imo. So the question is what does this refer to? The Midrash answers, this refers to the tabernacle, the Mishkan. And why is it called a crown in Atara? Because just as a crown is decorated, so too the tabernacle is decorated. As it says, an embroidery of blue, purple, crimson wool, and linen of weavers to do every manner of work, and master weavers. This is the crown with which his mother crowned him. And so just like King Shlomo would have gotten a very impressive crown from his mother on his wedding day, So similarly, but this really is referring to that crown. It's really referring to the Mishkan, because we had a very intricate crown, which we're giving to God in this case, actually, right? So this is the Mishkan, because it's very ornate, done with, again, there's gold, there's all these, each of these fabrics in the ancient world were extremely valuable, and they're worth their weight in gold. More or less. For more on that, please feel free to look up Tchelet. I've seen some interesting. I'm not sure if the exhibition is still on display. There was one in the not the Israel Museum, but across the street from the Israel Museum. The Museum of Biblical Antiquities, which is across the street from the Israel Museum, had a nice again, this was before COVID, so I don't know what happened. Where the exhibition has moved to, where they discussed, you know, the importance of and the value of Tchelet Agaman and Tolat Shani, of the blue, purple, and crimson, and how important it was in ancient context, focusing most on the Tchelet, because that's the one that's most relevant for most of the Jews in their lives, as we say in the Shema. So that intense embroidery is part of the joy and decoration of the Mishkan. So that's how we know this verse is referring to the Mishkan. It's because it's the decorated crown. So as we mentioned before, the problem was, how do we know that this verse relates to, that this verse is related to the Mishkan? It doesn't sound like it is at all. So then the other question is, how about we're talking about a crown that Shlomo wore on his wedding day, which we're using as a metaphor, but it really means the Mishkan. But the other question is, what crown? So for this, I'm going to need two readers, one of whom to be Rabbi Yitzchak, who's going to read the first paragraph, and somebody to read the second, and somebody to read the first and third, and somebody to read the second paragraph of Rabbi Shimon. So two volunteers, please.
Each correct answer is worth more than your original
answer. Okay. Amanda, are you raising your hand?
I did.
By your fingers in front of the video.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I fixed it. Sorry.
It's okay. Go for it. It's not going to be written by Rabbi.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be ready as fuck.
Okay.
I'll be very okay.
Okay.
Rabbi Yitzchak said, I went over all the scriptures and I did not find anywhere that Bathsheba made a crown for Shlomo.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asked Rabbi Elazar ben Bar Rav Yossi, is it possible that you heard from your father what is this crown with which his mother crowned him?
Oh, you're a third reader, actually. This one's actually a Rav Elazar Bar Rav Yossi.
He replied, yes, it's like a king who had an only daughter.
Okay, now the question is, what is this story? So for that, we have to go to the next slide. Okay, So the story is a little bit long, so but bear with me. Hopefully this will make sense. If it doesn't make sense, we'll explain it afterwards, okay? So what is the story with the king and his daughter? So he loved her too much and would call her my daughter. He kept loving her until one day he called her my sister. Until finally he called her my mother. Yes, this does sound a little strange. I see people's faces, right? So the point being, each of these is a term of endearment and increasing in value. In value, is the point, right? Again, I don't know how to actually term that, how to make that evaluation, and I'm not going to. But that's what the Midrash is going for, right? To the point. So, and then afterwards, we're going to go. There's examples of how each time, different times throughout Tanakh, when different words are used as terms of endearment between God and the Jewish people.
Right. So is it?
Yes.
Is it noteworthy to notice that he calls her my daughter, my sister, my mother, and he never calls her, thank God, my wife?
The only issue is that in Shir Hashirim, that is the most common analogy, is husband and wife, or daughter and Raya.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, not necessarily husband and wife, but that's, you know, group, you know, my each of their, you know, beloved and...
I get it.
And, yeah, beloved and in male and female form. So then, like, okay. Yes, correct. For some reason, we are not, there's no mentioning, which is interesting, right? We said it's like your wedding day, but yet we're not referring to a wedding here. Right? So... Okay, so then you see at the end, right? So again, so he explains, so that's this imagery. We're going to do the psukim, but the question is how does, the question is, how does that work out at all? Is my question. Meaning, as in, how does this solve the question, right? So remember the question that we just had, where is this crown? And the answer for where is this crown found is that it's like a king with an only daughter who keeps increasing in terms of endearment. And then as so at the end, we say when it's called my mother, and then, right, but do we actually get an answer of for where the crown is given? Is that ever given? In the, if you look through, just say the word crown anywhere in Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar's response is quoting his father Rabbi Yossi. The word crown is not to be found anywhere there. Right? So what's going on here? So the point being is that, so the answer is actually in the last phrase, which we didn't read yet. So, Rishon Bar Yochai. So, what's the conclusion? Again, he gives this nice parable for the love that God has for the Jewish people. And then, Rishon Bar Yochai is the one who would, you know, trying to find the answer. Hey, what have you heard from your father? And he says, so, Rishon Bar Yochai stood up and kissed him on his head. Right? So what's going on here? The point being is that we don't need an explicit mention of the crown being given either by Bathsheba to her daughter, Bathsheba to her son Shlomo on his wedding day. Just like you don't need something a description of God giving us a crown at while we are constructing the Mishkan. You don't need, the fact that it's not explicitly written in doesn't mean that the emotions and the meanings behind it aren't in fact there.
Do you follow it?
I'll repeat it again. So even though it appears that there is no explicit mentioning of the crown, the parable is simply saying that it's not about whether or not it was mentioned or not. The question is the love and the sentiment there that you would have given the crown on the wedding day? It's about the emotion and the feeling. The right, Rabbi Elazar, quoting his father Rabbi Yossi, is talking about the love that God has for the Jewish people. And here, that's what we see as well. We see that the relationship between them, which is also why this works very nicely at the end, when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai gets up and kisses him on his head, which is a term of endearment for his student Rabbi Elazar. Thank you for having answered the question and for having explained this beautiful relationship to me. Okay. All right. Make sense? I see some like questions. Also, there's noise on the background.
So oh, sorry.
So what was you had a question? Somebody had a question or yes?
Not a specific question. It's not clear to me. No.
Okay. So I'll go through. Okay, let's go back again. So again, the question is, what happened to the crown, right? When was the crown given? Right.
And the crown just being, when was the Torah given? Is that what you're saying? Or when was the Mishkan?
Meaning the question is, when did Bat Sheva make a crown for King Shlomo? Right? That's not mentioned anywhere in Tanakh. So except for in Shir Shirim. So we're like, wait a minute, where is this crown coming from? Like, what's going on here? And the answer for where is this crown is by a parable, just simply describing the relationship between God and the Jewish people, or between a mother and a child. It's simply showing the way that the degree of love that can be expressed. So okay. True, it never explains why it's not there. The point, but the answer is that it's not about whether or not there was a physical crown placed on the head of Shlomo by his mother. The point is the emotions and what that would have conveyed having had that being done. Which is why the story concludes with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai actually kissing his student, which also ties in well to the expression of emotion and love for someone else. Okay. So hopefully that's clear. If it's not, it's okay. Again, this is the problem when you have a parable. It may have made a little bit more sense back when it was given, when it was said in the time of the 5th or 6th century, or a little bit earlier, because Shimon Bar would have been, the 2nd century. When it was said, it made more sense idiomatically probably than to us, and that's okay. But as far as the emotion is trying to convey, we can understand it, even if we do find it strange for your daughter to become your sister and then your mother. But the point is that they're increasing in terms of endearments. And you're not only, again, that, everybody loves their daughter, everybody loves their sister, everybody loves their mother, and even more so if they're, if somebody has all three of those forms of love at once. Again, not that you ever should be in a situation where you're, mother is your daughter and also your sister, because that means there's something weird happened in your family life and we don't want to discuss that. Right? That's like one of the cases of the Gemara where, it's like, how do you wind up with, it's one of those what if questions. You don't want to go down that rabbit hole. We'll leave it. Okay.
Right. Can you see me? But
yes.
Hi?
Yes.
Okay, but on the mother-sister thing, but you know what? So it's really your daughter, right? But at different times of life, your daughter can be your friend, it can be more of a friend, so she's your sister. And then at one point of life, when you call her your mother, it's because your daughter is now taking care of you. So now your daughter is your mother. Like, it's just as if, it's just like as an evolution of life and how different people take on different roles, even though the person themselves didn't change. That's all.
All right. Sounds good. Definitely can be.
I think it's also, there's a different type of love for a daughter and a sister and I don't have a sister, but a sister and a mother.
I can only speak to two of those. I have no sisters. So, so, but yes, the other two I understand. Okay. So now that we've got that, now that we've established that, now the question is this the only interpretation for this verse? So we're gonna get a little more complex now. So the question is, when is the wedding, and when is the, like, there's the Yom Kippato, and then there's the Simchat Libo. Right? So when the wedding is, and when Simchat Libo is. So which one is which? Again, there's two different stages of joy. So now let's see what they are. So there's three different options. We'll see how they line up. Okay? So the first option is, when is the day of the nuptials, which is Har Sinai, right? That's the wedding day. And when is the joy of the heart? That's when they get to Yerushalayim. So this is, right, so again, Matan Torah, and then finally, when we finally build the base of Mikdash in Yerushalayim. That's opinion number one. But that wouldn't really help us very much. That's not what we're going for here. Right? But again, but that's definitely understandable. Those are two very joyous occasions, right? Receiving the Torah, as well as the construction of the Beit Hamikdash in Jerusalem. The next option is, when is the day of the nuptials, the wedding? That is by the Kriyat Yam Suf, when they sing Az Yashir. And when is the Simchat Libo? That is when they constructed the Mishkan. So that would work much better with our story, right? So now we've got a time for the Chatunah. We have a time for the wedding, and we have time, and it's directly relating back to the Mishkan, to the tabernacle. The only problem is that we already mentioned the tabernacle earlier, but it's okay because we're just going over again, right? We mentioned it, so we're also happy to be here for the construction of the Mishkan. Again, the initial process started by Kriyat Yam Suf, the Jews finally saying shira, saying praises to God, and now it culminates with the completion of the Mishkan of the Tabernacle. Also works out quite well. The other option is that the day of the nuptials, this is the Mishkan. So that's the initial stage. But when is the final true stage of the true happiness? This is on the day of his heart's joy, is when the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, is built. So that would imply that we're not quite at full happiness now because, well, we're only one step in the process, right? The Mishkan is a temporary dwelling for God, not the permanent dwelling. The permanent dwelling is actually the Holy Temple, the Beit HaMikdash, in Jerusalem. So which one of these works best with our Parsha and the joy? That would be the middle explanation. But the other two are also explanations that would explain when in Jewish history this verse would be referring to. Okay? All right. So next we have an instance of saying just how happy David HaMelech was in the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Even though he was not present for the construction, he definitely put in a lot of the effort in terms of assembling all the materials, and he wrote songs that were to be sung at the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. So what he has to say is, I'll read the Hebrew, and then I'll read the English. Yifei nof besos kala aretz, hart zion yarkitei tzafon kiyat melech rav. The fairest of branches, the joy of the entire earth, Mount Zion, by the north side, the city of a great king. So now we're going to parse this verse and explain what this means in the context of a story. Okay, so why is this so joyous when you view the Yerushalayim from afar? What's going on here? So Rabbi Yochanan, son of Elazar, says, there once was a peddler who went to Jerusalem. He went to sell his wares. He went and he sat there and he made no sales. And then he said, quoting the words from before, he said, Mesos kala aretz. Is this really what you call the joy of the earth? Right? What do you mean? Like, there's no business here. It's the worst place ever. After 1 hour, he had sold his entire stock. And then he said, Yifei nof, Mesos kala aretz. It's actually the fairest of branches, the joy of the entire earth. So what just happened there? We saw the peddler going from, you know, being unable to sell things, and all of a sudden he complains, and then it all sells out. Well, what's going on? So one option is, what's going on is, he simply didn't have the right perspective at that time, right? He was too short-sighted, right? He was so short-sighted that he just, you know, decided to dismiss Jerusalem for not, like, just because he had a bad day of business. And then shortly thereafter, because, you know, as business tends to do, you know, it's boring all day, then all of a sudden there's a rush. And then he's like, oh, actually, maybe it is. People often, only view a short slice of time and say, oh, that's the whole, that's everything. Just, I spent 5 minutes here, it was boring, that's it. But sometimes in order to truly experience and appreciate something, you have to actually look at the whole process to truly appreciate the experience. That's what's happening here. Also relates to the Mishkan as well. Constructing the Mishkan is a rather long and arduous process. And if you just look at that part, maybe you wouldn't really have said, oh, this was so great. But when you look at the whole process and the conclusion at the culmination of the construction and the celebration around it, then you'll actually be able to truly understand what we mean by it really is a happy place to be. And finally, this is just a fun aside. If anybody's any accountants, feel free to send them this one. So Rabbi Yochanan said there was a chamber of accounting outside of Jerusalem, and anyone who wanted to think about such things would go there. Why? In order that they shouldn't do their calculations in Jerusalem and be troubled by them, because she is called joy of the entire earth. Right? Since Jerusalem is so happy, therefore you're not allowed to have any accountants sitting there, because if they do, they'll make everybody all depressed. I know right now it's only a month till taxes are due, but I figured I'd ruin everybody's holidays by telling them in advance. So don't worry, you've got time. But you don't mention it during the holidays. You can mention it just before you get there and afterwards. So figured I'd say it now when we have plenty of time to pay off, so we can all hopefully get our taxes done and not have to worry about it over this. Okay. And last but not least, we're going to discuss why is it so joyous. Right? So we mentioned at the beginning of the year, the joy of the Mishkan. So now we're going to get some more details about why is it so joyous. So why all this praise? Because, as it says in Yeshayahu, it's called Kiryat Melech Rav. It's called the city of the great king. And the only problem is we're going to be discussing the greatness of Yerushalayim and of the Beis Hamikdash and the Mishkan. But unfortunately, the Yerushalayim was destroyed, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and we don't even have a Mishkan anymore. So once she was destroyed, once Jerusalem was destroyed, rejoicing passed, and the joy of all the earth was exiled. So now we're going to be trying to figure out what do we mean by our, by what does it mean by the, when the verse says, continues saying, Arva Simcha V'galam Asos Kol Aretz, what do we mean by that it has gone away? It was evening, right? So what's going on there? So what does it mean by arva, that all of a sudden it was all gone? It means that it was darkened and obscured. As it says in by the creation of the world, Vayera Vayiboker Yamachad, it was evening and it was morning one day. In this world, all of the joy of the earth has ceased. Because there is no Beit HaMikdash, there is no Yerushalayim to truly celebrate the way you properly should. And when God one day rebuilds Jerusalem, and he will return all joy to her. And that's why it says at the end of Yeshayahu, you may recognize this from one of the Haftarahs. Also might sound familiar because it's very similar to the, you probably have seen this verse plastered on a wall somewhere in Israel or Yerushalayim. That for the Lord shall console Zion, he shall console all its ruins, and he shall make its desert like a paradise, and its wasteland like a garden of the Lord. Joy and happiness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and a voice of song. Unfortunately, sometimes the only way you can truly appreciate what joy is when that joy is no longer. The Midrash is saying the best way to describe how happy the Jews were when the Mishkan was built, the only way to potentially describe that joy is to actually describe the opposite. Describe the sadness that was felt when we do not have that joy available to us anymore. Because without the Beit HaMikdash, we can't truly experience the full joy. But even though we can't truly experience the full joy, we can still look forward to one day seeing it rebuilt, because we know that God will one day console us and we'll be able to rejoice as the deserts of Israel and its wastelands become paradise and a garden once again. And hopefully we'll soon merit to seeing the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. Amen. So now, just to wrap up everything that we've covered, as well as to mention a little bit of scheduling points at the end of that. So again, so we started off by saying how happy were the Jews. We say it was as happy as if it was their wedding day. We connected to a verse in the Song of Songs. We went through how each and every word in that verse connects to a different aspect of the construction of the Beit HaMikdash and the joy that could be felt on that wedding day. And then we finally reached the conclusion of the Midrash, where, well, yes, there are all of these nice imagery, but really the only true way to actually understand the joy is to first appreciate our sadness for what we're currently lacking. We don't have the Beit HaMikdash, we don't have the Mishkan, and hopefully that profound loss and sense of loss that we have will someday be replaced with the exact opposite feeling of joy, and that we will be able to truly appreciate just how joyous it was when the Beit HaMikdash and the Mishkan were completed. So